Chapter 62. Trap. For 2 weeks they holed up in the sewer, healing, talking, and dodging the incessant patrols that hunted low and high for the escaped fugitives. Only Torbrand wandered above ground to gather news. The church militia allowed no one onto or off of Tenswater, and grumpy soldiers searched and scoured every structure at any time of the day or night without warning. After the fight, a diligent search of the sewers yielded another opening into a small cavern that afforded some relief from the choking stench and damp sewage. Thorbrand nearly exhausted himself healing them all, but within hours they felt fit and anxious to move. Unfortunately, the continual presence of marching feet above and sloshing trackers below pinned them underground. All save Maywen grew accustomed to the smell, and while she strove not to show it, their confinement below ground wore visibly upon her countenance. What light they had filtered in weakly through a small, moss-covered street drain, and they did not have enough fresh water to wash away the black muck that stiffened their clothing and rotted their boots. Torbrand's near-daily excursions brought fresh food, drink and bedrolls, but the news remained stale. Portals closed, soldiers everywhere. Jen and his companions looked little better than street beggars, uneven beards and ungroomed hair roughening their appearance. White streaks shot through Jen's beard where hair sprouted from scars along his cheeks. The clothes they had worn through the hardships of Elder Luri Mora still hung from their bodies, tattered, stained and rigid. Only their bearing and fit bodies betrayed that the wearers might be more than they appeared. Jen busied himself by trying to work himself back into shape after lying prone for days in a potion-induced stupor.
"How long will they keep this up?"
Volney whined after another evening patrol passed overhead.
"If they haven't found us by now, surely they realize they won't."
"They will give up,"
Torbrand asserted from where he sat on the ground, back against the wall.
"Thanks to Joran, they will assume we have magical help. Therefore it stands to reason that we could have used one of the portals to get off the shard. They can't be sure they have rounded up every portal mage in the city."
Thunder boomed outside, and they looked at each other hopefully in the weak light. They had waited for rain for days.
"I'm first under the grate if it rains," Maywen pronounced forcefully, moving in the direction of the opening.
The rest busied themselves claiming positions and moving their bedrolls away from the probable path of the deluge. To their delight, the rain fell, fresh water roiling down the opening. By the time the storm abated, an hour later, they were all clean and cold, wrapping themselves in their bedrolls for warmth. Sleep came quickly and pleasantly as darkness enveloped them.
"A good omen," Volney yawned as he settled in.
Jen hoped so. The feeling that he had let down everyone he cared about ran like a dark river through his heart, reminding him of Mikik's persuasions when the demon's poison took him.
"Were there not 100 before? Will there not be thousands after?"
He needed to get clear of the sewer, get his bearings again, and put himself to whatever good use he could. 2 more days passed before a herald on the street above announced that the portals had reopened and that the watch had ended the lockdown of the city. The herald's message proffered no excuse, but the citizens of Tenswater asked few questions, rejoicing at the end of constant patrols and raids. To the 6 sewer-weary fugitives straining to hear the proclamation through the slender grate, the news was the key to open their proverbial cell, and after Torbrand procured decent clothing for the young men, they waited until full dark before ascending into the city again.
"We don't want to be caught wandering the streets at night," Torbrand informed them. "The militia take an unkind view of those with business in the dark. We'll sleep in the first inn we find and leave in the evening of the next day. Jen, Maywen, and Hardman will need to stay out of sight as you are easily recognizable. Volney and Gerund will help me gather what we need to return to Mikmir."
The young men barely heard anything after mention of the inn. The idea of sleeping in an actual bed with a belly full of warm food, bathing in water actually warmed for that purpose, and inhaling the smell of anything other than raw sewage pushed aside all thought for purpose or the future. Creature comforts had appeared with increasing scarcity in their journeyings, and all intended to wring every last pleasure from whatever inn they stumbled upon. The inn that fell across their path first was the Barrel Cork, more of a drinking establishment than an inn,
raucous laughter and juvenile bantering flowing from slurring tongues and out into the street. Maywen scowled at the noise as they walked forward, while Hardman daydreamed about a common room brawl. Torbrand turned toward the rest.
"Are you content with this establishment, or would you prefer a chance of looking further on? Jen?"
At first, the party mistook Torbrand's meaning in addressing Jen, and only when he repeated it with more surprise did they turn to regard their companion, who stood stock still in the street, eyes unfocused and fists clenched. Maywen crossed to him hurriedly and took his face in her hands, forcing his eyes to hers. "Look at me, Jen," she intoned softly in Elvish. Jen blinked several times and breathed out sharply, face full of worry.
"She is in pain. Awful pain. Who would do that to her?"
"The Shalane," Maywen prodded.
"What did you feel? I've got to get to her. Something is wrong. It felt like she was burning in a fire. We must go to her."
"Does she live? Is she still in pain?"
"She lives."
He paused, a quizzical expression replacing the alarmed look of moments before.
"She seems fine now."
Torbrand strode forward, eyeing several people who walked nearby, regarding them with curiosity.
"We need to have this conversation in a more private place," he admonished.
He led them into a dark alley between the stable and the inn while he went to negotiate with the keeper. Master Rabin provided 3 empty rooms and promised plenty of food and drink for Torbrand's party. After slinking through the common area, they congregated in one of the plain rooms, closing the creaky door behind them and taking seats on 2 beds of dubious quality. Maywen spoke first.
"Have you felt anything further?"
"No. She seems perfectly fine now. There was no pain leading up to the burning sensation either. It is strange."
"What do you want to do?" Maywen asked.
"I don't know. My instinct is to go to her, but I know it would not be wise."
"You should wait, Jen," Maywen opined. "Merel wanted you safe in Mikmir, and that really is the best course you could take. This may just be a fluke or an accident of some kind."
The others nodded and murmured in agreement. Gerund stood and placed his hand on Jen's shoulder.
"If the Shalane is in danger, I will gladly go with you to the Abyss and back to help her. But we should wait for a clearer sign before we undertake that journey."
Jen nodded and everyone relaxed, the arrival of hot food and ale stifling all conversation as they savoured every bite, ordering a second helping of everything.
"You know," Volney commented as he leaned back and set his plate to the side, "I can still smell that sewer."
"It is still on some of our clothes and gear," Maywen lamented.
"Torbrand, do you think Master Rabin could find someone to launder our clothes tomorrow?"
Torbrand rubbed his beard.
"With enough money, I think Master Rabin could find a fish swimming in a sand dune. Since Tenswater seems to relish its own cleanliness, I think the request an easy one. We may want to wait to shave until later. Our unkempt appearance helps conceal our identity."
That settled, Torbrand called out, and a serving girl nervously gathered their dinnerware and left them to themselves. Before long, the party broke up to sleep, rejoicing in the scant comfort provided by straw mattresses, which, by the smell, most often found use as places to sleep it off. The next day dawned cold, brooding clouds moving slowly and spitting flurries or drizzling coldly in fits. They met briefly to review what supplies they should gather for their trek to Mikmir.
"I'm afraid we'll likely have to contend with the snow around the lake," Maywen predicted, "so we'll need warmer clothes for the young men. We need a bow for Jen as well. Do we have enough for horses?"
"Barely," Torbrand answered. "I'm not sure if the prices have come back down since the lockdown was lifted. They had risen fairly high. If we can't afford them, we will be stealing them. I am not walking all the way to Mikmir. Those with scruples can return with payment later."
Torbrand, Volney, and Gerund left after taking the morning meal, and the day passed slowly. The boredom and inactivity wore on Hardman the worst. He paced, mumbled, and swung destiny around listlessly, itching for an opportunity to go stir up trouble. Maywen sat against the door purposefully, throwing Hardman a withering look any time
"just one drink downstairs"
passed his lips. Ducking destiny's careless trajectories in the cramped room provided Jen with a modicum of entertainment while they waited, watching the weather providing the rest.
The storm worsened as the day wore on, and when Torbrand and his companions returned, they dripped all over the floor, the two young men shaking with the cold.
"We're all set," Torbrand announced. "Let's eat and hope Mickmere has better weather than this."
"What time of day will it be when we pass through?" Volney asked.
"Midday, I believe," Torbrand replied. "The portal we will pass through leads to Lipgate, about a day east of the town of Portalgate along the lake." "Let's move then," Hardman grumbled. "I am tired of Thames water."
Mina twisted her hands nervously. Her bold companion sat perfectly at ease, having replaced her more magnificent dress with the plain robes and veil of a servant. Mirelle had set her mind to play the Augmerian serving woman today, in hopes of speaking with her companions in the dungeon and finding some word about Jen. The Shalane's message about Athens baiting Jen by causing her fake pain set Mirelle to pacing and plotting.
"Surely he would not be so foolish as to come to Ironkeep," Mina had suggested 2 weeks after delivering the Shalane's message.
She hoped as much to comfort the Shalane's mother, who clearly cared for Jen a vast deal, as to deter the machinations of her plotting mind that so plainly manifested themselves in her troubled eyes.
"You are wrong," Mirelle
had answered, without deviating from the set course of her pacing.
"When it comes to the Shalane's safety, he will undertake anything, however foolhardy. He will come if Athen keeps at it, and even if he doesn't come, Athen's men are combing the world for him."
After 3 days, Mirelle had returned a message to the Shalane that she had a plan to warn Jen to steer clear of Augmere and Ironkeep, but she said nothing of how, save that Mina was to find a way to her quarters on 7th day after next. The time passed slowly, Mina fretting over her unknown role in the former Queen of Rugarth's plans. The Shalane expressed full confidence in her mother's abilities, but Mina felt strangely vulnerable under the scrutiny of the church elite wandering the halls, and she was humbled by her close association with Mirelle and her holy daughter. She almost missed her father, for no one dared glance at her with even a hint of malice under his obsessed gaze. With him gone, she felt unprotected. While she was allowed to leave the Shalane for short periods of time, Mina could not stay away long without rousing suspicion. In order to help Mirelle, Mina had located another serving woman with Mirelle's height and complexion, with which to switch places for the time she was gone. This in itself did not worry her, for one of the Vale's only virtues was facilitating this kind of deception. The women of Augmere had practiced it for years. Thoughts of what Mirelle had planned and what discovery would cost them both set loose the butterflies in her stomach and sapped the energy from her limbs. On 7th day, she walked into Mirelle's quarters to find the former First Mother dressed in servant's garb. Mirelle, a prisoner, intended to walk the halls of Ironkeep right under the nose of church, mages, and soldiers. Mina wrung her hands as she approached, but Mirelle's carefree manner calmed her. Perhaps the First Mother only planned for a short visit to her daughter, and it would all be over.
"When are our replacements to arrive?" Mina asked.
"Any time now," Mirelle replied, affixing the plain brown veil mesh over her head and smoothing the brown frock.
"I asked for my breakfast late this morning." "I don't know of any woman here as tall as you are," Mina warned. "I fear you will be conspicuous. You also walk the wrong way."
"Is there some other way to walk than one foot in front of the other?"
"Well, no," Mina returned nervously. "But you strut about as if you own the place. You must walk as if the place owns you. Hunch a little, and it would be best if I did the talking. I don't think you could come off as properly meek."
"As you wish. This is foreign to me, but my need is great and it will inspire my better efforts, I assure you." A knock at the door signalled the start of their adventure as their replacements entered. The woman Mirelle was to mimic was fully 4 inches shorter than her counterpart and not as blonde.
"I am the best they could do," she apologised.
Mirelle waved off her concern and ate her breakfast calmly, while everyone else engaged in an informal fidgeting contest.
"Where do you intend to go?"
Mina inquired as Mirelle finished up.
"Well, I need to get into Athen's head, but his quarters will have to do." "What? After that, I should like to get into the dungeon and speak with some of my people there. If we can manage it, I want to see my daughter."
Mina, flummoxed into muteness, could only follow dumbly along as Mirelle gathered the plates and strode for the door. The former First Mother was crazy.
"Ah, yes," Mirelle said,
The place owns me. Stooping slightly at the shoulders, Mirelle put her hand on the door handle and turned back to Mina. When I leave the room, do I go left or right?
She pointed to the left, and Mirelle yanked open the door without further delay. Mina rushed up behind her, not daring to look at the Elder Fair guards as they passed by, but feeling their icy stare nonetheless.
I will need you to lead, Mina, Mirelle whispered after they were safely away.
Mina gulped and struck out toward the kitchen.
Tuck your veil into the neck of your dress, Mina instructed. Why?
Mirelle asked, complying.
It signals to the others that you are up to no good, and the women in the keep will know not to hinder or engage you.
Clever. Mina gained confidence the farther they went, noticing that the churchmen and soldiers barely spared them a passing glance, despite Mirelle's utterly unconvincing attempt at ambulatory humility.
Slower, Mina admonished between the frequent hunch and eyes down.
Only the general, thick-headed, unobservant nature of men in general would spare them a cell. Every serving woman they passed gawked unobtrusively at the swan trying to pass for a chicken in the coop. Once they managed the kitchen, Mina breathed easier.
How do we get to Aethon's quarters?
Mirelle asked, after setting the dishes on an already overflowing table and pulling Mina into a dank pantry.
I know the wing where the padres are quartered, but I cannot say which door is his. We will need to inquire. We also need a good reason for going there, and I personally would like assurances that he will not be there.
He will not, Mirelle assured her. I've already learned that he rarely visits his quarters during the day.
And who did you learn all this from?
Mina whispered.
Leda and Brince, Mirelle answered. They serve the padres during the day. Look, Mina implored, you stay here while I go ask around. If you keep your veil inside your dress, and if you stay inside this pantry, no one will bother you. You are too tall and too regal, no matter how you are dressed.
As you wish, dear. After Mina left the pantry, Mirelle leaned against the shelf and tried to conjure up a way to warn Jen to stay away from Ironkeep. When she had first arrived in the Ogmerian stronghold, she resigned herself to a dull winter and spring, isolated from news and good company. Fortunately, the sisterhood of the repressed Ogmerian women surprised her with their ability to work around their restrictions and bring word of the world at large. Even so, there was little to tell until Mina managed to send Leda with news of Aethon's plans to lure Jen to Ironkeep. Mirelle needed no other incentive to act. Mirelle turned and squinted out a crack in the pantry door as Jocelyn, Shadan Cairn's first wife, entered. Mirelle knew Aethon had requested that she and several other of Torbrand's wives and progeny come from Elena Shard to attend to the management of the household, while Shatan and the Padres lodged there. Jocelyn, while arrayed like all the other women, carried her stout frame with an unmistakable authority, and her voice cut through the din of the kitchen with a warlord's edge. Mirelle remembered well Jocelyn's visit to her on the first day of her confinement, probably out of curiosity rather than necessity. While Mirelle could not fairly say that Jocelyn possessed a mean-spirited temperament, the way she profusely apologized for Aethon, forcing that monster child, Mina, on the Shalane, and the lengthy diatribe afterward about Torbrand's favourite daughter, men, and Ironkeep in general, Mirelle knew a bitter woman when she saw one.
"What's this I hear about some skulking business going on today?"
she thundered, ending all conversation. The serving girls worked twice as quickly, but silently, while Jocelyn afflicted each one with a withering glare. Mirelle slunk back into the pantry and prayed that Mina had the good sense to stay away until Jocelyn cleared out.
"A flock of mute magpies, are you?"
Jocelyn grumbled.
"Well, if I see any veils tucked in today, someone will be swimming in cauldron grease and chamber pots until Eldoloth says otherwise."
Mirelle yanked the veil out of the neck of her dress and hoped that Jocelyn had no quarrel with the pantry. She breathed as quietly as she could while Jocelyn stalked around the kitchen, taking time to personally criticize each woman there.
"And what a surprise!"
Jocelyn exclaimed, interrupting one of her more spirited attempts at demeaning her underlings.
"Mina!"
Mirelle cursed under her breath, and chanced to peek out the crack, finding Mina rigid in the kitchen doorway, facing Jocelyn like a deer trapped by the hunter.
"I should have expected that with reports of an uppity woman with her veil tucked in, roaming the halls, that you would be involved."
The pudgy accuser sauntered closer, clearly relishing this opportunity to debase someone she truly hated rather than merely despised. She grabbed a wooden spoon from off of a nearby table and thrust it in Mina's direction.
"Don't think that just because the Pargers have assigned you to the Shalane that you can do whatever you please in my house. She won't be here forever, and your father is a fugitive now. When the time comes, I'll have my claws in you as deep as I can push them."
"Yes, mistress," Mina squeaked.
"So what are you up to? I see your veil is tucked in."
"Nothing, mistress."
The Shalane..." A sharp whack of the spoon to the head brought Mina up short.
"Don't nothing me. You're never up to nothing, you spoiled, lazy wretch."
"If I am lazy, then certainly I must be up to nothing sometimes."
"Whack. Don't sass me, smart mouth. What are you up to?"
"The Shalane wanted more food. The baby grows and she is hungry."
Jocelyn raised the spoon reflexively, but found no cause to strike.
"So why is that a cause for tucking in the veil? Seems harmless."
"Padre Aethon monitors her food closely. The Shalane didn't want him to know."
From the pantry, Mirel felt like applauding Mina's quick thinking.
"Is that so?"
"Yes."
"Well, the Shalane shouldn't be snacking behind the Padre's back, and I am surprised you would go along with it. What if the Shalane got hold of a rotten ham or old fish? Or maybe a rat's done his business in the wheat and the Shalane got sick and lost the holy baby. How would you feel then?"
"I do not wish to undermine the Padre, but I cannot disobey the Shalane. She is the holy mother of prophecy. Guide me, Jocelyn. Should I comply with the Shalane's request, or return and tell her that you say she is in the wrong, and should stay hungry until Padre Aethon's command?"
"Well,"
Jocelyn mumbled, stalling after Mina's unexpected transfer of the onus of the issue to her.
"I suppose that you should do as the Shalane requests, only you tell her to get permission from Padre Aethon himself in the future."
"Yes, mistress."
"Well, get on with you then. Eldaloth knows the women in Ironkeep have seen you lollygagging around quite enough these past months."
Morel exhaled as Jocelyn marched from the room. Mina retrieved a serving platter, rubbing the bumps on her head with her other hand.
"The Shalane will heal those for you if we manage to see her," Morel said as Mina joined her in the pantry. "Did you find out what you need to know?" "Yes, we are fortunate. The women who clean the Padre's quarters will let us join their party today. They await us in the Great Hall." "I suppose I won't be needing this."
Mina put the tray on one of the shelves.
"Now, remember..."
"I know," Mirel stopped her. "Hunch, eyes down, slow. The place owns me. Let's go."
As they walked toward the Great Hall, the number of men and women they encountered increased. Mirel had to remind her nervous companion to slow down and stop fidgeting as they crossed through the tall, dark doors that led into the immense room. Four other women in brown dresses awaited them there, having brought buckets, brooms, and cloths enough for the addition to their party. Wordlessly, they set off through a side door, Mina grabbing a bucket and Mirel a broom. They climbed a flight of slippery, polished wooden stairs, the women ahead of them talking quickly in low tones.
"You're holding that like a scepter,"
Mina whispered.
"There can't be two ways about it. How is one supposed to hold a broom?"
Mirel inquired with some irritation. The women in front of them snickered.
"Not so straight up and down," Mina counseled. "Haven't you ever swept before?"
"I can honestly say this is the first time I've ever handled this particular cleaning instrument."
"You would be worthless around here," Mina observed.
Mirel smirked.
"True, though I find the thought bothers me little."
All talking died as they ascended into a brightly lit hallway furnished with soft red rugs, lamplight beaming through the crystal glass that imprisoned the flame. An Eldafair guard stood at post in front of every door. Morel's breath caught in her throat as Padre Nolan left his room, face somber, and regarded the group. Aethon's lackey. Morel wanted to claw his face too. Remembering their subterfuge, she hunched doubly as deep and tried to install as lowly an opinion of herself as she could, while the Padre walked unwittingly by. Mina's bucket stopped shaking as Padre Nolan's steps faded down the stairs. Taking Mirel by the arm, she led her past the stoic guard and through the first door on the left, the other women breaking up and passing through other doors farther on. Mina shut the door and exhaled.
"Open the shutters," Mirel ordered, leaning her broom against the wall. "I long to see the sunlight." "It will be cold. I can live with the cold for a bit if I can just see the sun."
Mina complied, and both looked out over the snowy courtyard. The sunlight, while winter weak, infused Mirel with energy. The massive iron-banded gates of Ironkeep stood open as wagons, horses, and soldiers passed through. A couple of Padres wandered about, overseeing everything. Mirel sighed.
We'd best be about our business.
What are we to do?
Mina asked.
You clean, I'll look about.
Mina humphed. Mirel regarded her with a smile.
Careful, or you'll risk appearing as useless as I am.
Mina swept listlessly as Mirel rifled through the papers on Padre Ethan's table.
Anything good?
Mina asked after a while.
Not really, though it is humorous how he goes on about how Shaitan is deciding this and organizing that.
Shaitan is much busier dead than he ever was alive.
Being pontiff has certainly invigorated his work ethic. Nothing I can use, unfortunately, but I think my best bet lies over there.
Mirel crossed the room to where a simple chest sat on the floor.
It's locked,
Mina stated flatly, dipping the rag in the water to start some dusting.
And likely has spells on it.
Mirel grinned.
Well, I hope you can keep a secret.
Mina dropped the rag on the floor and crossed to her.
What's that? Well, I've a few skills of my own.
The former First Mother removed a pin from her hair.
The spells I will have to risk, but my first protector knew a few things he passed on to me.
Mirel bent the end of the pin, and after she probed in the keyhole for several long moments, the lock clicked and opened. She lifted the lid easily and stared inside, eyes wide.
How did you—
That son of a whore! Mirel exclaimed, face livid. There in Ethan's chest sat the mirror Ethris had stolen from the church, the assassin's glass. She plucked it out, holding it like a dagger.
I should have known! Quietly, Highness,
Mina admonished nervously.
I should have known, Mirel repeated, voice subdued. Shaitan would never have the brains or the guts to kill Ogbith. There will be a reckoning for this.
What are you talking about?
Mina asked, face inquisitive but apprehensive. Mirel walked to the window, needing fresh air. She told Mina the story of Regent Ogbith's murder, the young woman agape at the information.
But wait, Mirel burst out. This is it. This is all I need.
She turned toward the window.
Show me Jen.
Mina scooted close to her, eyes wide as the mirror swirled blue, finally settling on a cloaked figure walking down a street in a breezy snow. Jen stopped suddenly, rubbing his chest and turning to the side, eyes searching. The face was unmistakable. His eyes peered directly through the small portal at the two of them.
Who are you?
He asked, eyes searching. Mirel ripped the veil from her head with her free hand, Mina following suit. Others crowded in around Jen.
Father, Gerund,
Mina said, voice soft with wonder. Mirel thought she detected a particular note of pleasure in her voice for the Prince of Tolnor.
Mirel, Jen said, are you all right? The Shalane...
I'm fine. Listen to me, Jen. Listen carefully. The Shalane... Well, the pain that you feel from the Shalane is Padre Ethan's doing. He is...
Behind Mirel, the door hinges creaked. Fire shot through her veins and she stumbled. Beside her, Mina gasped in pain. Mirel gritted her teeth, turning. Padre Ethan stood in the doorway, Jocelyn behind.
You are done, Mirel, he growled.
The agony intensified. Mirel fell back against the desk, the mirror spinning out of her hand and shattering on the corner of the table. Padre Ethan released the spell, the pain subsiding. She felt like someone had twisted her into knots. Ethan sprinted to inspect the shards of the mirror that lay scattered about the floor, reflecting the brilliant light from the window. His dark gaze fell on her.
It's ruined! You meddlesome woman! You have meddled your last.
Mirel struggled to her feet, rubbing the muscles in her neck.
How dare you accuse me of meddling when you slaughtered Regent Ogbith? You are a murderer and a coward!
Leave us, Jocelyn,
Ethan ordered, and take Mina with you to the kitchens until I come for her.
Not a word of this to anyone, or you'll regret it.
Jocelyn, properly cowed, grabbed Mina by the sleeve and fled. Ethan closed the door and leaned heavily against it, rubbing his temples.
Yes, I had Regent Ogbith assassinated. His bungling command doomed the caravan, and you know it.
And killing him was the only way to deal with the issue. He followed the plans meticulously drawn out and endorsed by the church. How is he to blame for what happened? If Shaitan Cairn had command, it would have ended just as badly.
We should have followed Jen and Maywin's advice.
I disagree, and I won't take the time to debate what has been. I have to deal with what is to be done.
While I can't always see a clear path before me, I can see the one in front of you, and you should thank me. You and Mina will enjoy more difficult accommodations from now on, but I think you'll like your company better. Guard!
You'll pay for what you've done, Ethan, Merrell warned him. You cannot do Eldaloth's work with Mikik's methods. You are the most faithless of us all.
Ethan appeared stunned by her accusations, but anger burned deep within his eyes.
Take her to her beloved Dark Guard, he ordered the sneering Elderfair. The First Mother will spend the rest of her stay in Ironkeep enjoying the squeaking of rats and madmen.
The portal to Kingsblood Lake and Mikmir awaited not 100 yards down the road, but everyone in the group stood in befuddled amazement at what they had just witnessed. Merrell's desperate and painfully terminated communication angered Jen and stoked his worries afresh. For several long moments they merely stared at each other or at nothing at all, as thoughts and emotions wrangled with reason to form some sort of plan.
"I cannot go to Ironkeep," Maywin said first. "I have errands to accomplish for the First Mother and for Ethrys, as do Hardman and Torbrand. Jen, I know what you will do, but it is exactly what Ethan wants."
"We'll see if it's what he wants after I get there," Jen growled, mind set. "I cannot hide in Mikmir while Merrell and the Shalane are treated in such a manner."
Torbrand stepped in front of Jen and met his gaze.
"Remember what I taught you. Ethan knows you care for Merrell and the Shalane more than anyone. He is using them to get to you. They are bait. If you want to frustrate Ethan, then get to Mikmir and do not go near the people you love."
He dropped his voice to a whisper.
"You know what I feel for Mina, and I would go to set her free from that place, but not on Ethan's terms. All the sword training in Kihal cannot overcome magic. Merrell and the Shalane would agree with me on this."
Jen was unmoved. "What you argue is wisdom. I know very well that this trap is set for me, but Merrell's communication convinced me that their pain is real. If Ethan wants me badly enough to hurt the Shalane, of all people, then they cannot be safe while I live. An end to their suffering will only come by their escape or by my death. I will go to Ironkeep so that one or the other can happen."
"I will go with Jen,"
Gerund announced after a short silence.
"If Merrell and the Shalane are being treated in such a fashion, then the Dark Guard must be dead or imprisoned. I go for my brothers and for my queen."
"As do I," Volney joined in. "I will not let Augmerians maltreat my countrymen and my queen without answering for it, though the journey be hard and cold."
Hardman appeared torn, face scrunching and hand caressing Destiny's handle.
"A rescue in Ironkeep does sound like more fun than I've had in years."
"General, you cannot go back on your word to Merrell," Maywin reproached him. "Your part is critical. We need you in Mikmir. There are no two ways about it. If Jen succeeds in Ironkeep, it will be through stealth and cunning, not a rousing fight against an entire fort full of soldiers."
"Yes, yes, I see,"
Hardman relented.
"Stealth and cunning are rather dull. Oh well, we part ways here, lad."
"Thank you for coming for us," Jen said.
Maywin came forward and stared into his eyes with as much authority as she could muster.
"What you are doing is a mistake, Jen. I cannot give you my blessing, but I do hope to see you again. You will be on your own. We do not dare say a word of what we just witnessed to any of the Rugothian aristocracy, or there will be war."
"I understand.
May Eldaloth bless your foolish heart. Thank you, Maywin."
"Jen," Torbrand said, "I'm with Maywin on this. But if you insist on going, I can shorten your journey by a couple of weeks and get you inside Ironkeep more easily than you might think. Maywin, can we spare an hour so I can teach Jen a few things about Ironkeep and speed him on his journey?"
"Certainly."
"Very well. Let's get inside for a little while."
"I'll just go to a tavern while—"
Hardman began.
"No, you won't," Maywin insisted.
They started back along the street, searching for a suitable place to talk.
"I wonder who the gorgeous dark-haired girl was with Merrell," Volney asked.
"She was very pretty, but probably one of the slaves," Gerund speculated.
"She is not a slave. That was your wife," Jen informed Gerund. "Mina."
"What?
You heard him?" Volney laughed. "Perhaps your marriage doesn't seem quite as repugnant as it did a few months ago."
Gerund glowered, but Jen's eye did not seem as determined a glower as it was when Jen first handed him Torbrand's letter in Mikmir.